everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you along with my buddy John Couch. What a weekend here in Tucson. A weekend of historic proportions. The most rain so far to date of any monsoon. It's one of, if we keep on pace here, one of the wettest, I think fifth or sixth wettest months on record. And how about that? Never got above 80 degrees on Saturday or Sunday. That has never happened before in July. So things dry out a little bit. I think this is one case where we all are welcoming a nice sunny day in Tucson. It's Monday, July 26, 2021. We are in our 11th year in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. The Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. It's time for our Monday political face-off, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Moe's located at Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen. Moe, they've been around, the family, since 1985, specializing in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing, and hanging services and systems. And they're doing e-commerce on their newly redesigned website, and that is Moe'sGallery.com. Our Monday political face-off welcomes John Munger to the program. John, well-known Tucson attorney, former president of the Arizona Board of Regents, and one-time Republican candidate for Arizona governor. And Jeff Rogers is here, another well-known Tucson attorney and former chair of the Pima County Democratic Party. John and Jeff, I'll tell you, this felt more like the Pacific Northwest when we get 2 days of rain like that on Saturday and Sunday. And that's the soaking rain that we really need here.
Well, my horse's stalls are just soupy muddy. So I was glad to see it end, but we did need that rain. And there's a lot of flooding. A lot of intersections around the county are closed. A lot of flooding. The Rideau River was the highest I've seen it since 1993. It was a good soaking we needed, but I'm glad we're getting a little bit of a respite so things will calm down and dry up a little bit.
John, things are really greening up over at your home.
Oh, yeah. We love the rain and the constant rain over a period of a couple of days. It just came down, and instead of coming down in buckets, it came down in regular rainfall that soaks in. We love that.
John and Jeff, Tucson voters will decide on a $15 minimum wage. Tucson would be then, if voters say yes to this, be the second city in Arizona. Flagstaff has already passed a $15 minimum hourly wage. That would go in effect by the city by 2025 among workers who are not already making $15 an hour.
Right.
Is this something we need?
Well, I think it is. I think that people are barely surviving out there on the wages they're being paid. I can't even imagine how somebody's living on the federal minimum wage of $7.25 an hour. That's just, you know, that's horrible. And if Republicans would quit blocking a minimum wage increase, we could do it nationwide. But I think Tucson can afford a $15 an hour minimum wage. And, you know, we've got working poor that are having a difficulty maintaining housing. The housing market is very tight right now, and it's very difficult to find for a family a two-bedroom, one-bath apartment for less than $1,000 a month. I mean, it's daunting for these working poor, and any little bit that we can do to help them. We haven't seen any major dislocation or problems in Flagstaff. They looked at Flagstaff and other communities around the nation who've raised it to $15 an hour and modeled it on those communities. And I think that employers can afford to pay that. And frankly, right now, people are, in a lot of places, people don't want to go back to work for some of the low wages that are being paid. And I'm shocked that the business community, led by Ed Ackerley, is actually going to oppose this. I think it'll pass by a wide margin, and I think any money they spend opposing it will be wasted money. They ought to donate it to the food bank instead.
John, are you on board with this or no?
Well, you know, right now the minimum wage is $7.25. Is that
statewide now? It's
$12.15 an hour.
I think that the minimum wage, if we're going to have a minimum wage, it needs to increase. I don't know that it needs to go to $15 by
2025.
But I think the main issue would be, what are the conditions, the other conditions that go with it? And I think we have yet to see what the city council is talking about putting in that that ordinance. So I do want to see, I don't think it's a awful increase from $12 to $15. Over a period of time. I think that gives people a chance to adjust. I'm not wholeheartedly against it. I certainly don't take Ed Ackerley's point of view that it's it should not occur in any way. But I, you know, God is in the details in these things, and I want to see what other conditions are accompany that.
Some of those details are that it would create a city office of wage enforcement, which would basically investigate allegations that employers are cheating by paying less than the minimum wage, or that they are not correctly paying overtime after 40 hours a week, or that they're incorrectly classifying people as independent contractors. Those would be the three main things that would be sort of in the details.
See, and those types of things, why do we need another city bureaucracy? We already have ways of enforcing underpayment. If you're not paid the minimum wage, we don't need a city bureaucracy to do that. You can file suit. You can do a lot of things. There are already agencies out there that that enforce those things. Why do we need another bureaucracy? Those are the types of conditions that I just don't think we need. How much is that going to cost? Are we going to have another office with a whole bunch of enforcers going out when we don't need that? That's the kind of thing that I don't want to see happen. I don't mind so much having a minimum wage go up. And if somebody isn't paying the minimum wage, there are plenty of ways to enforce that without having another city bureaucracy.
Well, I think what would the ordinance, the proposition would require that if people are caught doing that, that it'd be $100 fine per instance per employee.
Well, so, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But how much is that bureaucracy going to cost? You've got to have then agents going out. It's not just an office downtown. They've got to go out and hire agents to go out and fan out all over the city. It's just wasted money as far as I can see. There are plenty of ways. We've always had minimum wages for years. We've never needed such an office of bureaucracy to go out and enforce that minimum wage. Employees know what the minimum wage is, and they can demand it. So why all of a sudden do we need this bureaucracy? I don't get it.
Well, I think it's a good thing. I think that there probably the most common thing is to try to evade the minimum wage is to classify people as independent contractors. And you know, I don't envision this being a very large unit of, you know, just a couple, two or three employees who would, because I can't imagine that it happens a lot.
Tell me what government agency doesn't expand once you start it.
You're saying once they hire one person, then that's
then he's going to say, I'm overworked, I don't have enough, and then they're going to go out and hire more.
Then he'll need a whole staff.
They're going to need a whole staff, and then they got to have secretaries and all of that. And it just, we've never needed it before. Why do we need it now? Insofar as the independent contractors, that's between the worker and the employer. And very frankly, the IRS already enforces the independent contractor law. If the person isn't truly an independent contractor, then the IRS taxes everybody as an employee. And that means the employer has to pay Social Security taxes for the employee, et cetera. we don't need another government agency here in Tucson to be doing that. It's already, those are already enforceable.
And it comes at a time when there is a really a worker shortage. People are, employers are having a lot of trouble
finding
people.
There's a lot of upward pressure on wages right now.
Yeah, just, that's why I don't mind the wage increase over a period of time. But it's, God is in the details here. What comes with it?
All right. Why don't we pause right here before we change topics? Some new polling out on how President Biden is doing, and there's a couple of conflicting polls on that. And we'll be right back on our Monday political face-off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge. Be right back.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowell and Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com. The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved regional transportation plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
MedCare to You is a new Tucson-based concierge telemedicine urgent care, specializing in caring for our patients in the comfort of your location. We deliver your prescriptions and even provide in-person visits with our dedicated staff. It's convenient, quick, private, and your personal information is always protected. Find out more at MedCareToYouAZ.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show and the Monday Political Face-Off. Jeff Rogers is here and John Munger, our Political Face-Off, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. A couple of polls. You know, so hard with these polls, Jeff and John. One poll shows that Joe Biden, pretty much his popularity hasn't moved much in the first 6 months. I think this one poll we were looking at said it was the most stable since the end of World War II.
Yeah, has him in the low to mid 50s as far as his approval rating. So
yeah,
and that's not surprising. It's not super high, but it's not going to plummet. I mean, we've on the heels of a president who never ever got above 45% in the entire time, and really hovered around 40% or less for an entire 4-year period. So I think this is refreshing. It shows that we're kind of moving in the right direction. And I used to dread to wake up in the morning and see what kind of stupid thing Trump had said or done, in the last 24 hours. And it's nice to not wake up with any kind of, crazy crises all the time that are manufactured by somebody who's, can't keep his wits about him. So I'm just thrilled to have Biden in there. I feel like the adults are back in charge.
And, Bill, I think you're talking about the CNN document.
And that
was that CNN article Press. That I have in front of me.
Yes.
Doesn't cite any new polls. It says Biden's average approval rating is 53%. It's around 53%. It doesn't cite a new poll. In fact, there was a Gallup poll, which is a left-wing poll, came back on Friday and showed that his approval rating had dropped. That's an actual poll, not an average of ratings. That poll shows that he's dropped by 7%. That's a Gallup poll.
Wasn't this an Associated Press?
Associated Press NORC
no,
poll.
That,
looks like it's a new poll.
No, that's a new poll, but it doesn't cite his... it doesn't cite 53%. That's an average that you're saying. Moreover, his approval rating, the approval rating for the direction of the country, positive rating for direction of the country, has dropped 19 points. Only 36% of the people in this country think the country is going in the right direction. Moreover, what the ratings also say is that the percentage of the public who strongly approved of Biden went down from 31% strong approval rating to only 27% now. So he's losing his base of strong approval ratings down from 31% to 27%.
Well, it sounds like you think as this first 6 months of
they've not been good.
South.
Now he's still okay.
Yeah,
I'm not saying he's not okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned to me off the air that his approval rating is better than any point by any other president. That's not true either. It says no other president in the post-World War II era had an approval rating at this point within his own party higher than Biden. So yeah, I mean, the Dems love him. The independents, 52% or so, don't like him, and the Republicans really don't like him. So yeah, the Democrats love him. He's strong within his own party, stronger than any post-World War II Democrat or president.
Within his own party.
Within his own party.
Okay, but you say the independents don't.
The independents only approve him by 48%. And that means...
which is higher than they ever approved Trump, ever.
Well,
Not once did he reach 48% with independents. Not once.
I will tell you that Trump's polls, depending on the polls you read, got as high as 51%. And we can squabble about polls.
Yeah.
But Biden's numbers have dropped 7% and his direction of the country have dropped 19%.
Let me ask you, John, is it time for the Republican Party to begin disconnecting itself from former President Trump?
Well, are you talking about disconnecting from him personally or disconnecting from his policies?
From his policies.
No, his policies are great policies.
How about personally?
I am not going to support President Trump in the primary.
Okay.
Because I think our message and those policies can be advanced by less divisive people.
That's the first time I've heard you say that. So,
well, I mentioned it before somewhere. But I just think, but I would support him in a general if he won the primary, certainly.
But you're not going to be on board with the primary. You're not going to support him.
I'm not. Okay. I'm going to support DeSantis or Nikki Haley or somebody like that. Just because I think we can get the same policies without the divisiveness of Trump. He's a businessman, and I'm not sure that he has the political ability to articulate his positions in a way that the public understands, as Ronald Reagan did, for example. But I love his policies. His policies were great. Jeff talks about how, you know, all these issues came up. These are issues, Trump brought up issues such as the Chinese and the North Koreans that nobody else was afraid, nobody else was willing to bring up. He was the one that started getting us out of the Afghan war. Now, he would have done it differently than Biden. He would have left our intelligence resources there.
We are still leaving intelligence resources there.
No, we're not.
Yes, we are.
And he would have left some air power in there.
I think we're still doing some air power.
Well, the air power is coming in from way far away.
Dubai or somewhere.
Yeah, so you can't have an immediate response to troops in trouble.
Yeah. Let me ask Jeff here, John. Jeff, you just heard John saying that he would not support Trump in a primary. Do you think John's an outlier in that?
I think there are a lot of people who feel like John does, but if they're in an elected position, they can't speak up and say it. Mm-hmm. They're afraid of the cult of personality that Donald Trump has built around him. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I'd love to see Donald Trump be the next nominee for president for the Republican Party, because we'll beat him by, what, we beat him by 8 million votes? We'll beat him by twice that the next time around.
You didn't beat him by 8 million votes.
Yeah, it was 81 to 74.
And you cheated in several states.
Yeah, there wasn't any cheating, John.
The Arizona polls, or the Arizona audit, has shown that there were 74,000.
John, that's absolutely untrue. And if you read today's newspaper, you would see the explanation for that. That's how they count the votes, and they put them into two separate batches. There's no missing votes.
Yes,
there was no chicanery. There was nothing like that.
Jeff, you haven't read the audit.
It happened. Yeah, I'm not going to read anything.
Well, you guys can argue about this till the cows come home.
Right.
But you know,
the mail-in votes where there was no mail-in ballot requested.
That's been debunked already.
That isn't debunked.
So I guess he does still support Trump.
No, that's not a matter of supporting Trump. That's a matter of making sure that our elections are fair elections.
Shouldn't we move on, though, John?
No.
No?
We've got to make sure that our elections have integrity.
Okay.
The Democrats are consistently cheating in these elections. And there's just no way that you can ignore that. That doesn't mean you have to go back, Bill, and try to unseat Joe Biden's the president. I'm the first one to agree with that. Nobody's trying to unseat Joe Biden. What we're trying to do is make sure that we have election integrity, and I don't know why the Democrats are fighting that so hard.
I think Arizona has some of the best-run elections in the entire United States. And that comes from somebody who served on a bipartisan election integrity commission for at least 6 years. And so I have full faith in Arizona elections.
Well, you may, Jeff, but you've got to deal with this audit.
That audit is a sham, John. It's a complete sham.
Jeff, you can say that, but I know what the numbers are and you don't.
I know exactly what the numbers are. Biden won by over 10,000 votes, and they recounted the Maricopa County votes three times.
And
one of them was a hand count.
You can count the ballots, Jeff, but the problem is if the ballots were never requested, mail-in ballots were never requested by people, then there's 74,000.
No, that's not true,
Jeff,
John.
Let me finish.
No, that's true.
If there were no requested ballot, mail-in ballots for 74,000 people, but they voted anyway by mail-in ballot, there's 18,000 people voted on Election Day but were subsequently removed from the polls. There's another 11,000 people who are not on the even on the voter rolls who voted. There's something wrong going on in Maricopa County.
All right. Well, why don't we leave it right there? John Munger and Jeff Rogers, thank you very much, gentlemen.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
All right. The Monday Political Face-Off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. We'll take a break right here. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management.
Enjoy the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley. Savor the view while sipping on locally brewed craft beer and enjoying gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, at West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley and on the web at noblehops.com.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Welcome back. It is the Monday edition of the Buckmaster Show, presented by Green Things. Green Things and Zocalo Village, who have the naming rights, and we thank them for that, for our studio here on the Buckmaster Show. Yes, what a weekend for the rain. So things are, well, they're very green, let's put it that way, over at Green Things, 3384 East River Road. Very interesting weekend at Green Things, being so close to the Rito River, which was running in some areas maybe only like 5 feet from the top of the embankment. It was really running. I like to call it the Rito Rapids. It was something to see yesterday. Green Things, 13-acre site, home to Zocalo Village, all that great merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. Here are the websites, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's welcome now Dr. Jeff Silvertooth. Dr. Silvertooth is the Buckmaster Show contributor on agriculture, a very important sector of our economy. He's one of 2 dozen regular contributors to our program. We try to bring Jeff in about every month or so, sometimes 6 weeks. Dr. Silvertooth is the professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science at the University of Arizona Department of Environmental Science. His responsibilities include leading a program directed towards the development of irrigated crop production management strategies that optimize the soil plant system and economically, with full consideration of the short and long-term impact on the environment. Jeff is a fellow for both the American Society of Agronomy and Soil Science Society of America. Jeff, how are you? I'm sure you enjoyed the rain.
I'm fine, thank you, Bill, and absolutely enjoyed this rain a lot.
It was of historic proportions. Right now, this monsoon, Jeff Silvertooth, with almost 6 inches officially at the airport since the start of the monsoon season, which is a little over 3 weeks. That means we are, this has been an extremely productive summer rainy season. In fact, the most productive to date. In fact, the month is looking like it could be the rainiest month ever recorded since 1895, the official records for July. When they say 6 inches at the airport, where we live, Jeff, up in the, at least the Buckmasters, up in the central lower foothills, we unofficially, Jeff, have had about 10 inches of rain.
That's about what I've had. In the Midtown, I just live near Reed Park.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I recorded in my backyard, unofficially, as well, with a little array of rain gauges.
So that that was of historic proportion, those numbers. But something else, how unusual and flat. In fact, it's never happened since they've been keeping records, Jeff. The temperature never broke 80 degrees on Saturday and Sunday, and that's never happened before. There have been days, I think this was the 11th time, where it didn't go above 80 degrees on a solitary day, but back-to-back, that's never happened before.
Right, you think about it, too. A year ago, we were having the same thing with 30-degree higher temperatures.
30-degree higher,
and
basically a non-soon. The rains really didn't come. I was posting quite a bit on my Facebook page, which folks can easily find at Bill Buckmaster. I was posting quite a bit about the weather over the weekend. And, Jeff, one of the most common questions that are coming in, will this, one person asked, is this going to help the Colorado River watershed? And I was able to answer that one by saying, no, it will not, because Tucson's water is not going to be going up to the Colorado River.
Right.
The other question, and maybe you can help us on this, will this water immediately go to our groundwater, ground table?
Well, no, probably not. It takes quite a bit of saturation in the upper portion of the profile in the soil to get that water to go ahead and move on down through that soil on into what we call the vadose zone, which is the unsaturated zone between the upper portions where the soil exists and down to where the groundwater exists. And what it'll do is it'll help the surface conditions, particularly vegetation that we see out in the desert. And that has a lot of positive impacts for us. Of course, you'll see also, too, your weeds in the yards will grow now and,
oh, yes.
and things like that. But
yeah.
the trees and the vegetation in the landscape will improve. You know, we've lost a lot of vegetation in the past couple of years because of the severity of both the drought and the heat that we've experienced. So this will help us in that respect. But no, it won't really replenish our groundwater. We need about 3 years, probably a good decade, of rainfall like this on an annual basis to begin to replenish our groundwater. But we're in such a situation right now where we're, what we... We'll take any drop that we can get, as
and
you know.
We did get a minor drop, and the numbers aren't out yet for this week, but the National Weather Service has what they call a rating system for the droughts. We were at a D4, which is really the worst level. Mm-hmm. That's what's called exceptional drought. We have now dropped to D3, which is
right.
extreme drop, and there is some thought that maybe we could go down one more notch because of what we're seeing here.
Well, you know, maybe. And there's another thing, too, to look at. There's another tropical, subtropical trough
that's
possibly going to move into the system later
on
into this
Friday
area.
Friday and Saturday.
Later this week, that's yeah. right. So if this kind of pattern could persist for a while, that's the kind of improvement we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
We won't see a replenishment of our groundwater. We're not getting this water into Lake Mead. But we could see an alleviation, let's say a lessening of the severity of the drought that we're going through. We're 20 years into a, 22 decades into mm-hmm, a mm-hmm. significant drought. We've had some variation over those two decades, but that's what we're looking for right now, Bill, is maybe just see some moderation on the severity that we've been experiencing.
Can too much rain affect our agriculture industry, like cotton production?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
it can.
Yes, it can. Yeah, matter of fact, one of the things that happens, it's kind of an irony. In desert agriculture, rain is actually more of a problem in the immediate sense than it is a positive. For
really?
Example, yeah, it's a positive for us with regard to all the things we just described in terms of the overall landscapes and the hydrosphere. So we rejoice in that. But in the short term, in the immediate term, extra rainfall will actually do things like push salts that have accumulated on the surface as we're irrigating in a desert environment, push them down into the root zone. Fortunately, there's been enough rain in most of these places in central Arizona to actually go ahead and push that water on down through the root zone and not cause a shock from the salts. So that can happen. Particularly it's dangerous in drip systems, which conserve water,
mm-hmm.
but they also accumulate a lot of salts on the soil surface. So you mm-hmm. can see a lot of people in town may see that, by the way,
mm-hmm.
may see some shocks on their plants because of after the rains, it looks like drought. You know, it just rained all this much and we have saturated soils, but the plants look like they're drought stricken. Well, it might be because there's been some salts pushed into that root zone of a drip system or a bubbler system. So things like that happen, and also, too, humidities come up at night, and the night temperatures come up, and the crop goes through higher rates of respiration, and we see more fruit loss and abortion, and we see more of insect pest problems. Weeds proliferate, you know, around the borders of fields. So it's an attendant issue that goes along with the rains that we don't see with the drier conditions. But
two sides of every coin.
Absolutely.
Right?
Good point.
All right, we're going to take a pause right here with Jeff Silvertooth. Be right back on the Buckmaster Show. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006.
The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. Monday edition of the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. It was just so nice to have that kind of overcast for 2 days, just kind of kick back, put some mellow music on, in my case, a little bit of Cat Stevens, some music from the 60s, and just relax. And Jeff Silvertooth is with us. He certainly understands that because we're about the same age. We share the same birth date, different years. Jeff is the Buckmaster Show contributor on agriculture, professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science at the University of Arizona and the Department of Environmental Science. He's been over there at the University of Arizona for 35 years and also was very active. He was on the management team when the rollout happened with the COVID-19 vaccine. It's been so disappointing for those of us who've had our shots, Jeff, to see that many people are saying no to the shot. And school's going to be starting at the U of A. Can you give us kind of a gauge of those on campus, maybe what percentage might have a vaccination?
Actually, on campus, the vaccination rates are pretty high.
Okay.
As they were at the end of the semester last year, they were, you know, above 75-80%, probably higher than that right now, mm-hmm. on campus. And that's faculty, staff, and students on campus. But, of course, we understand there's about 40,000 students at the U of A. About 35,000 students are off campus.
Yeah.
And so it's harder to measure those folks. Now, there was some discussion earlier last semester about having a requirement for anyone that was going to be on campus in classes.
Similar to University of Indiana, which kind of led the way in that, and
right.
other state universities have joined in that with
right.
the mandatory shots.
Right.
But the governor said no to that.
That's
either.
Right. Their governor put out, he got wind of
here,
this.
Yeah.
ASU was pushing on it pretty hard.
Yes,
put
they
out
were.
An executive order.
Yeah.
He said there shall not be any of these requirements, these mandates for vaccination.
Will there be masks required on
right
campus?
Right now the guidelines are holding. If you're going to be on campus, you're going to be in classrooms and around people in congregate settings, there will be mask requirements.
Hmm.
They are doing that. But the vaccination issue is still voluntary. Now, I will say, too, my view, it's not been a problem with regard to accessibility. I haven't really been quite impressed with the way the state and the counties have pushed out the vaccine and made them accessible. You know, you and I can go down.
Yeah,
and
you're saying if you want one, you can get it.
You can get it. That's right. That's right. So it's a choice.
Yeah.
It's a choice that we're seeing. And we're just a little under 50% with regard to total all people in Arizona being vaccinated. Mm. So, you know, we're right in there with a lot of other states. There's some states that are less than 30%. Some counties in Arizona, less than 20%.
Wow.
You know?
Interesting article. I forwarded this to you. It caught my eye over the weekend in Politico, and the title is "The Red Meat Issue That President Biden Won't Touch." The administration wants to dramatically shrink the farmers' climate footprint, but Biden's top officials aren't talking about serious changes to the America's meat industry. Are Americans, Jeff Silvertooth, still eating a lot of beef?
There's a huge demand for beef. Huge demand. And not only Americans, but other people around the world. Beef consumption, in many respects, is almost a signal of a nation's affluency.
Wow.
And so when you look at beef exports and imports and where the demand is, it's a strong indication of a nation's affluency. For example, one of the strongest markets for U.S. export and the export of other nations as well, and the recipient of that meat is China. And so it's the Chinese have been obviously improving their economy. Back in 1995, it was estimated that if you know, the average Chinese could have the protein equivalent of one egg a day. It'd be a huge increase in nutritional balance of many native national Chinese, mainland Chinese population. And what they've done is they've continued to improve their economy. Their capacity to improve their diets has gone right along with that. So you see, in the United States, where beef exports take place, they head off to three major nations in the Orient, Asia, Korea, Japan, and mainland China. Of course, Mexico is number four in with regard to our exports. So the United States, yes, is consuming abundance of red meat. There's a high demand here, and there's also a demand externally, internationally as well.
Now, as the article pointed out, Jeff, the problem is that meat has become an intense culture war issue.
Yeah, unfortunately it has. It's another one of those flashpoints.
I mean, recent right-wing media attacks were falsely claiming that the president wants to control each individual's beef intake.
Right.
Or look at the steady stream of press releases by farm state lawmakers blasting any hint of federal or local governments or somehow helping that there was this rumor that there would be a mandated meatless Monday.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Right. No, that's not going to happen. No one's interested in doing that. But that's a good example.
Yeah.
That's a great example of what we're dealing with in so many facets of our life today is the plethora of information that's available and then trying to sort out fact from fiction.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate the efforts that you have on this program to address that and try to get people on here with factual information and contrast the various ideas. This is a good one. There's no substance to that, nor is there any substance to the fact that the administrations are trying to obfuscate and hide how much information, how much is happening, what the impacts are environmentally and what the impacts are with regard to health, with regard to meat consumption. You know, National Institutes of Health and meat councils, the Beef Council of the United States, they're actively involved in research to try to improve the health and the environmental footprint of meat in the diet of Americans. And that's a fact. And are there still things to be done? Is there still improvement to be made? Absolutely. But I can tell you, and I can assure you, tremendous amounts of effort, work, funding is going into efforts to try to improve meat production efficiency, both with regard to health impacts, healthier product, as well as also less environmental impact, lower carbon footprint.
I want to ask you about the climate problem and how agriculture is a significant part of it. According to this article, the climate problem, it accounts for 10% of all U.S. greenhouse gases, and I'm talking about agriculture, accounts for 10%. That's a lot,
but you think about it. Agriculture is in the business of carbon management. That's what it is. You know, it starts with photosynthesis and plants taking carbon out of the air and incorporating it into what we call dry matter. You see a plant grow, that dry matter production is coming from carbon, water, and oxygen. And that carbon then is cycled into the products that we harvest from these plants. Animals consume that carbon. They're through plants that either that we grow or they eat out on the range. And then, of course, the products that we eat are carbon-based. That's where it all comes from. So then it's not a 100% efficient process. There's leaks from that system. You know, for example, you harvest a crop, one that's easy to think of a corn crop or a tomato crop. We take the fruit and we leave the rest of the plant in the field. We disc it back in or incorporate back in into the soil, either in our yard or in a field, and that plant material breaks down. Carbon is released into the soil, and a lot of it's released into the atmosphere. You know, same thing with
animals. Yeah, I never thought of it that way.
Absolutely. It's a cycle that we're going through all the time.
Carbon is like the centerpiece, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's the centerpiece to the entire process of life. If we didn't have plants to fix this carbon out of the atmosphere, we'd have nothing to eat, you know, essentially. And so you think about the whole process. If it's carbon cycling that we're concerned about, plants and agriculture is right at the heart of it. And so is our survival. And that's not a 100% efficient system. There are leaks in the system. The question that we have is, how can we tighten it up and how can we make it better? But the good thing, the news that would say it too, is it's been determined very accurately, as you say, about 10 or 11% of the carbon going into the atmosphere is coming directly from agriculture. All things considered, for me sitting here as an agronomist, you know, as an agricultural scientist, I say that's not too bad if you consider really the grand scope, the scale of carbon fixation and carbon transfer that we have in our food production systems and our general life systems on this planet.
And environmentalists want that down to decrease that 10 or 11%, but how do you do that?
Well, there are a lot of things that are being done right now. For example, the genetics with some animals are being improved so that they are a bit more efficient with regard to their transition. One of the things that happens in efficiencies of systems is you say, of all the carbon that's fixed in a plant, how much of it actually goes into the yield? We call that a harvest index. That's if you improve the harvest index, you know, the amount of carbon, the amount of dry matter that goes into a yieldable portion of a plant, like the fruit, then you've improved that carbon efficiency. But that carbon still goes somewhere in the end. It comes through an animal, either a two-legged or a four-legged animal quite often. And the thing with animals, then how do you improve that? Well, the genetics have been improved, so they're more efficient with their carbon transitions. You know, it's these concentrated animal feeding operations, a lot of times they're now concentrating the manure, the waste, where all that carbon is contained, trapping the methane that comes off of it, using it as energy, as an energy source, and that's an improvement in efficiency. So there's things like that that can be done, technologies that are in design process right now that are feasible with regard to helping us improve that type of efficiency. But that's the kind of things that are going on right now, Bill. That's the things that have been done to help us improve the efficiencies. And I've seen it in the course of my 30 years of working out here in Arizona, the past 40, 50 years working in agriculture. So it's a stepwise, slow process, but it's a worthy goal. But to make it 100% efficient, I don't know if that's feasible, but we're moving, we're making improvements.
Jeff Silvertooth, agronomist at the University of Arizona, always a pleasure to have you on our program. We'll look forward to your visit in September. We'll see you, Jeff.
Very good, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That'll do it for the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our Silver City is a great sponsor of our program as well. Only a three-hour drive. It's such a beautiful area over there. The Gila National Wilderness looking so good with all this rain. Find out more about your trip over to Silver City by visiting southwestnewmexico.org, the place for where to stay and so many things to do. Have a great afternoon, everybody.